Hello, thank you so much for downloading our episode. This is John Gora. I hope you listen and you get inspired. Don't forget to subscribe so that you can get our episodes each and every week as they drop. Be the first listener and get inspired. Hello and welcome to One Top Radio Podcast. This is John Gora, your host with you. And this morning I have with me a strategist in line with marketing leadership, Joy Abdullah, who's coming live from Malaysia. It's afternoon on your side, Joy, and I would like to introduce you to my audience. And the best way to do that is allowing you to take this time and talk to them and let them hear what you have and what a beautiful voice Joy have.
John, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on One Life. I'm honored. That's what I'll start off with first. And hello, good afternoon, good morning to all One Life viewers and listeners globally. Thank you so much, John. Really looking forward to our conversation.
That's great, Mr. Abdullah. And I call him Joy because he's a simple guy who's always looking forward to helping people strategically, helping people to manage their business and also manage their upcoming organizations. Joy is also one of those who are doing a lot of great things on LinkedIn. And I know him as, everyone knows you as one of the Create the Edge agents who are doing great interviews and bringing great business people and entrepreneurs together to educate the world over. And I always tell my audience that if you are not on LinkedIn, you're missing a lot because there are so many things that are going around there. And one of those people that you'll meet is Joy, who's with us today. So today we're going to discuss something that is around leadership and business culture, and how culture and leadership impact and influence business. And the best person that was to do that with us, I saw it that we can invite Joy, who will take us through this bit by bit and let us see how this is important in a business structure or a business environment and the myths in and out of a business. So the first question, Joy, that I would like to put across is, can we accept or acknowledge that work-life balance is a myth, or is this a true statement or untrue according to your experience and what you've seen around business and life in general, Joy?
Thank you so much, John. Let me get a little controversial so that hopefully that'll bring more viewers and comments on board. Yes. Work-life balance is a myth. And let me explain that. Why is it a myth? The name of your podcast, very aptly, is One Life. When we are born, the thing that is absolutely sure is that we are going to die. In the process from being born till we die is something called life. Now, you can label life something in the morning, something in the afternoon, something in the evening. It's like we change clothes. So if you're going to play football, you wear your football gear and then you change out of it into your normal civvies and do your other work. Life is one. There is nothing called work life. So we wake up, if you look at our daily routine, we wake up, we do our morning rituals, and we go to work. Now, who and what is going to work? It's actually self. It's a physical body, which is our host, our heart, our soul in that body, if I may put it that way, goes to a place earlier. Today we do it remotely, but we go and do something for 8 hours or 10 hours called work, which we are paid for. So what actually is happening over here? Physically, we are going, we are giving up that time, and in return for that time, we are getting some money we call salary, right? Or as a person, we give up that time to earn an income for that unit called a business. Now, when you, as a personal individual, you are leaving your home or you're leaving your environment to go to another environment, a lot of things are going with you. Your thoughts, you know, your attitude, your behavior, you don't actually leave them behind when you change clothes. They're part of you. They're part of your DNA. So they travel with you into this place called the workplace. And then you are interacting. So I meet John at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's my choice if I want to have a smile and say, good morning, John, have a fantastic day. Or, morning, John. You see, that's your behavior, your attitude all coming out. So you're carrying all of that. Now you're in an environment, which we'll tackle later in the podcast, that starts impacting. There are stimuluses coming in that environment that start bringing out your reaction, i.e. behavior. Now, how you behave becomes what your internal structure, your emotional intelligence, your awareness, your mindfulness, all of this, how you lead yourself comes into play. So coming back to the point, what you bring in, it's all part of you. You cannot separate that at work, where unfortunately, business has been structured in a manner historically from even way before I started my career, that's 3 decades ago, where humans are a resource, just like raw materials are a resource, capital is a resource. What people forgot at that point under that so-called industrialization kind of management approach is that this resource actually has a mind that thinks and makes choices. It feels. Raw material does not feel. It's an inanimate object. Capital cannot talk. So the point I'm making is we are one as an individual. Our values and personalities are set between the ages of 7, 8 to about 15. That gets sharpened by the time we get into adulthood. All the environmental influences that we receive make us who we are, which we take to work. Now, we are expected, or earlier we were expected, to leave who we are at the door and be a very straight, stoic, firm manager, controlling your teams, being an executive who always shows his skills and go forward. It has led to an epidemic called mental health problem. Globally, we know what stress has done. We know where wellness is. These are the fallouts of the so-called work-life balance. And why I call it a myth is because if you're chasing to balance, what exactly are you balancing? Two personalities inside you? It's a no-brainer. You cannot balance. You're going to become schizophrenic. And that's what has happened today. So work-life balance is a myth. My learning has been in my career, if you are who you are, i.e. a much maligned word, authentic or real, right? If you're not in the game of being liked by other people for appreciation, but you're liking yourself, and then you do the activity or you do good because you like yourself, you're being one all the time. And when you're being one, whether it's personal or it's work or it's friendship or it's with your spouse, your behavior is exactly the same. You know, your relationship behavior is exactly the same. And that's my perspective on being one life. And that's where the more work we are doing and the work that I do, especially in terms of business area, which is marketing or brand experience, is that the experience, it's one experience. You have segments of that experience. You have moments of experience, but there is a common foundation. And that common foundation is basically being true to who you are. I have a favorite catchphrase, which is be brave. It's all you've got as an individual. Be who you are and brave enough to bring it out, because otherwise you're going to be scrambling to do too many things, and we all have 24 hours. So if you're trying to balance what you do to earn your income or, you know, sustenance versus who you are and what drives you, you really are going to land up making yourself fragmented. And all that's going to do is lead you into, you know, a spiraling circle downwards where your best self does not come forward. Be you, be true, be adaptable, so that when you approach, you're approaching from the perspective of kindness and serving. And that's why I love your podcast, because the name, it's one life. So if you are one, 24/7, what you do, comes from that one perspective of doing good, helping others. And you can't go wrong with that. Kindness goes a very long way. That's it.
That's very beautiful and profound there, Joy. And, you know, as you're speaking, something comes into my mind, and I'm kind of asking myself and agreeing with you that life-work balance is a myth. Because one thing that I've always asked myself about this narrative is, like, if at all there is something called work-life balance, it means we are two different body, such correct. That when you are home, you are somebody else. When you absolutely. Go to work, you're somebody else. That's when you'll have to balance this. But when we look at it literally, people tend to think that having a work-life balance is having, you know, a work that is empathizing with you, having a work that is giving you chance to, like, relax or have a peaceful mind. And it doesn't necessary or make it a balancing thing, because the balancing part of this this statement is a myth generally, because it's the change in character. It confines you into changing yourself into something else, which correct. Is not living a real life, because you get, after some times, we are mentally tortured, we are physically tortured, we are even tortured at work, and that's why everywhere you go today, each and every company, those people working, the people working there, the employees, the staffs, everyone will be complaining. What about your side? What about your company? How are you guys doing it? Absolutely. But it is said that grass is always greener on the other side. But absolutely. When you start to water yours, it will yep. also become green. So okay. let us stop looking at life-work balance and start watering what we have. To absolutely. Be just the same person, the authentic one, or the authentic version of you, each and every place where you go.
Go ahead, John.
Whether it is in church, whether it is in mosque, whether it is at work, whether it is at home, be you, and you'll get the work-life balance that people are talking about.
Absolutely. You see, I loved what you just said, because there's a gap in expectation. So what happens is, when you're an employee and you're going in, and there is an expectation from the business or the employer side to behave in a particular manner, right? Right at the start, when you are going to become an employee, you're going through a process called interviews and selection, right? This is where both need to see, do I have a fit, or what in jargon we'll call, is there a culture fit, and then is there an attitudinal fit? Because what are you doing here? It's just like the time when you, before you decided to marry and you met your wife and your wife met you. Two individuals arrive at a common agreement to say, do we complement each other? And I have a principle. I always believe that man and woman were created by our divine maker, not to be superior and inferior to each other, but they were made to combine and be a team. See, man, woman has the woe in man, as in they provide the woe. Okay, this is my own personal philosophy. When a man and woman combine, you have the most beautiful team in the world that are, you know, has been made, which is called a family, right? Now, whether you have children or you don't have children, those are individual choices. But marriage is a very sanctimonious binding. It creates a relationship. It creates one, which means two bodies in one unity. An employee-employer, a business relationship, is no different. Yeah, it's on a piece of paper. You're contracting for your time and your skills. But if you pull back and you really are looking at helping a human being, you are taking somebody's time. So isn't it your responsibility to at least ensure that individual grows, right? And the employee's responsibility is, somebody is giving me what I need in this human world for my time. Isn't it my responsibility to make sure that the business grows? So you see that the perspective changes. When both comes from helping each other, both wants to serve each other, there's only one way. It's up. You grow. That's what I mean by there's work-life balance is a myth. So I love what you just said. Thank you.
Wow. That's very beautiful, Joey. And I love how you're bringing it as well. And, You know, when we come down now to business itself, there's what we call business culture, which is simply, or in a layman's language, the tradition of a business. What binds people together, what binds the resources together, and what makes that resource move in a systematic way that will devolve duties, devolve the resources itself, and also see into it that there is a relationship, a good relationship and a cordial relationship in between departments, among us the staffs, among us the workers, among us the management, and you know, and this culture is a very important aspect of any business any organization. But there is always what we call influence and impact, and there's so many things that will influence a culture. There's so many things that will impact a culture. One of them is leadership, and yep. I would wish to know from you, Joy, how would you say leadership can influence or can impact a culture of an organization or its brand experience to, you know, attract or not to attract the target group or the society or the community where it's working?
Short answer, leadership is critical success factor number one where culture is concerned. And culture becomes critical success factor number one where the brand experience going out is concerned. You see, brand experience, just to digress for a moment, brand experience is actually what the employees feel, the employee experience and the employee engagement translated out in behavior to the customers and to business partners. It's how you feel, you communicate that. That's how we humans are. Now, coming back, imagine what would happen in your house. You're the father, you're, you know, one of the team members, the senior management in your house is you and your wife for your daughter, right? Now imagine if you and your wife were at odds. If she thinks one way and you think another way, can you imagine the impact on your daughter? Your daughter's totally confused. What do I do? Dad is saying we don't go out now, but mom is saying we go out now, right? Okay, why is this analogy? Because family always gives me the best learning in business. That's how important leadership is, because leadership sets not only the vision, it provides the communication and the clarity to be able to make people understand what's in it for them to work towards that vision. That's number one. Second, by explaining and by acting, which means helping people, right? Leading by making sure the team actually achieves. The leader sends a signal to say, I'm interested in your growth. In your growth lies the business growth. So it creates that behavior, which becomes culture, right? Employees start emulating, if I may use that word, of what their leader does. And when they start emulating, as I said earlier, the behavior translates out. You see, what you feel is what you do, because we human beings are emotional people. We may want to think we are very analytical, we are very logical, we are very brain-driven. But you know what? At the end of the day, we are purely heart-driven. Whether we recognize that or not is a different issue. Third point, the way leadership is in a business, in an organization, creates how work is going to be done, creates the process and its supporting system. And that, the leadership behavior, the process, and the system, these three things become what we call culture. Now, you can't see culture. You can't smell culture. You can only feel culture. So let me give you an analogy here. Have you seen your own heart? Are you able to hold your own heart in your own hands and see it beating? No. We haven't reached technologically to a point where we can go into our chest and take it out. But we feel the heartbeat, right?
Yes.
It tells us we are living. That's our biological way of knowing. We take a pulse rate and then we have 90, 60, whatever the parameters are that we are living, we are breathing. Culture is exactly the same thing. You can't hold it, you can't see it, but you feel it. And it's what drives you. It's a very strong stimulus, and leadership is what forms the culture by default or by design. The way the leadership behaves, speaks, and acts, will and always results in a behavior forming. That behavior is culture. Now, whether we want to be a toxic culture or we want to be a very conducive culture, that's a leadership choice. So where it goes back to is when we are looking at who are the leaders. And by the way, when I say use the word leaders, I don't mean senior management, CEOs, board of directors. I mean everybody, because we individually are leading ourselves. And I'm 57 years old, but I believe I need to lead myself better even today. So which means we should be open to knowing, learning, understanding. And what that does is it creates a truth. It creates the fact that I don't know everything. I need to collaborate and get different perspectives, but together we can achieve something. And which I brought into my own career now, where, as you know, I've got two collaborative ventures running, both on the LinkedIn platform. One is Create the Edge and one is 3-Minute Marketing. But back to the point, so a leader has to be very self-aware and has to cultivate high amount of emotional intelligence or that ability to have empathy. Now, I'll share an example here. I'm somebody who's not very highly empathetic. I've been a manager for 30 years, coming from an old school of business, which is command and control. I am a very good problem solver. I'm a very good doer. I come in first in class when it becomes follower, right? But I've learned how to question and ask why. I've also learned how that will benefit the other person, my collaborator, my partner. So what that has done is it's brought me people to work with who have a higher empathy factor than I do. But I have a higher analytical factor than they do. When we combine the two highs, right, we get to another level. And that's that another level, okay? Now, the level is up to the organization and us individually. So when you come from that being your own self and a collaborative mindset, you bring people together. That behavior creates a culture where one is helping another one, not the classic rat race and competitiveness where I'm going to stab you in the back to get to the next rung of the promotion, right? No, it becomes one where there's security, because you suddenly know John's got my back because his interest is me doing this part of the project well so that he can execute his side good. There's a reciprocity and appreciation that's happening, right? Different environment. It thrives, you grow, you bloom in turn. And what that does for a business, literally, is it goes out, it ripples out, to use a word. Because when you enjoy, when you're secure, your confidence in what you're doing just booms. You know, it's like a rocket taking off and getting into stratosphere in nanoseconds. It booms, it goes through the roof, and people are attracted to that. We have antennas because the stories that go out from the brand, they're like awesome. They're so positive. They're giving very clear value benefit. And that's the line of thought. The leadership behavior from being self-aware with high emotional intelligence creates a collaborative work environment where people want to do the work because they're helping each other. And that radiates outside. So that's the impact of leadership on culture and on brand experience.
That's a great experience there that you're getting from you, Joey. And with that alone, somebody can see how experienced you are in terms of, you know, leading. You know, leadership is for all of us. And so when you have a company that you are so much trusting and believing in to be a good leader, I think you will always trust that the business and organization will go right in the right track. So it's great. And I really wanted also to talk about what you have said, the relationship you've given culture and heart and the body. Mm-hmm. You know, I was listening keenly and seeing how you're explaining it. You can never hold your heart out of your body and look at it, but you can always believe that it's working by feeling the impulse.
Absolutely.
And the heart is like the culture. You know, what you do to the body, that is what you do to the culture as a leader, will influence how the body will work. And what you do to culture will influence how the business will work. So the simplest way that somebody can use to understand how leadership influences culture, because what you do to your body, to your feelings, will impulse the heart. And, you know, sometimes it will start beating highly, it will beat low or normally as it is supposed to be. So that was a great one, Joy, and I really appreciate it. And I hope that the listeners and the audience are also gaining a lot of great pieces of advice on how to lead business, how to treat culture, and as well as how to make this myth work-life balance come true. You know,
It's a myth. It is a myth.
But we are trying to help people make it come true by just understanding that you become the real you, the authentic version of you.
Yeah, we've lost this, and it's no fault of ours. It's because the way, you know, the previous so-called Industrial Revolution 3 was all about industrial machinery. It was all about factory mechanization, so to speak. So the processes in management that came about were all looking at industrial factory process line, so to speak. We've used that. We've moved on. So, you know, it was like, I remember this quote of Henry Ford. He said, if I had asked people what they really wanted in terms of transportation, they would have asked for faster horses, right? But he created the automobile, and it took him years to get the automobile established. So it's the same thing. This is the impact of technology. What I notice in my part of the world out here in Asia, and especially in business, is that we are forgetting there's a word called human in the term human resource. A business is an vague label. You see, without people, there's no business. A business is done by people, with people, for people. So if you remove the human, the people component out, you just keep business, what's happening? It's space, nothing.
Yeah.
That's the basic premise. And today we are seeing this move back, not just in leadership, because businesses are being disrupted thanks to technology. It's exactly what happened way back in, you know, 1900, and 100 years later, we are seeing it. Today, we are talking about technology disrupting everything. Yes, right. Technology is a facilitator. Creativity and innovation comes from the human brain. Somebody created AI. Now, there are general AI and, you know, specialized AI, but it's a human brain that created the code, which reads whatever it does. It's a human brain that created the computer. Human brain created light bulb, you name it. So if you focus back on people, lead from, hey, I'm not sure about everything, but can we look at this together and get 2-3 other people to get different diverse perspectives on board? The output is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Caveat, patience is required. You can't grow a plant in one day. You can't have a baby in below 9 months. So, you know, patience, persistence, and authenticity. These are the three catchwords that I would leave behind in business
today. That's a boom. That's a boom, Joey. That's a boom. That's fire. And it's lovely to have you, Joey. And I'm really learning as well from these. And I hope this is the best conversations we've ever had here on One Talk podcast. There's something that happens in a business, Joy, and that is the adaptability to change, the effects of change, and also bringing in new innovative ways of doing things and all that. But the most challenging part of that adaptability or change in a business is a shift of the culture or a disrupted culture. And does it exist? Can a company or an organization change its culture or shift from one culture to the other? And when it shifts, how does it happen? And how does that influence an organization, Joy?
I've got three experiences in my career of this kind of a culture shift and culture change, everything. So let me walk it through. The answer to your question is, yes, it can happen. The second point to that answer is, it's about commitment, intent, and will. Again, these are not tangible elements that you can see. They don't come onto a balance sheet as ROI or asset valuation kind of a stuff. Now, the analogy that I use, or I will use, is this. Culture, there's nothing called shift. Let me clarify this first. It's under purely under the word change. Now, to change ourselves individually, you see, what happens is what we do is out of habit. We do it without even realizing that we have a habit of doing what we do every day. Sometimes if you're very mindful, we actually have certain rituals, you know. For example, I get out of my bed always on the left-hand side of the bed. I can get out on the right-hand side, but I don't. I myself today do not know anymore, why is it that I always swing my legs out on the left-hand side? Because if I got out on the right-hand side, the exit from my bedroom is closer. But I get out on the left-hand side, and then I have this thing of wearing my glasses and having a drink of water, and then I walk out of my bedroom, right? Now, why I'm giving this is, every business has certain habits, right? Another word for habit is process. A statement of process is, this is how we have done it, right? Now, nobody stays in an organization for eternity. Those days where, you know, people of my parents' generation who used to work for 30, 40 years in one organization are long gone. Today, if you're working somewhere for 3 to 4 years, wow, you know, you're a veteran. So in my last corporate gig, I worked in the organization for 7 years. And it's only much later I realized, damn, I should have actually left and gone to a different organization 4 years because, you know, 3 years too long, so to speak. I digress. So there are these habits, these processes. What happens is, when the change in culture comes about due to a couple of things. One is a restructuring, one is mergers and acquisitions, or you have a new subsidiary or a new organization that's coming into play. In all three, there is a core group of people, usually in business we will call the senior management, okay? Or let's put it, board of directors or certain shareholders, stakeholders, whoever, responsible. So that's where intent, willingness to change, and a very clear vision of what is the culture that I want needs to form up. So if you don't know where you want to go, any which way and any which form of transportation can take you, because you don't know where you want to go, right? So, you know, you want to go to Kenya, you want to go to Kuala Lumpur, you want to go to London, doesn't make any difference because you don't know where you're going. Are you going to go by sea, plane, road, walk, cycle? What I'm trying to say here is, if you don't know what you want to do, you can't get started. So you've got to have a very clear vision. What is it that you want in terms of that culture? In changing culture, how can you actually say, so what's my culture going to be? What's my behavior going to be? It's not. So you go back to, why am I in business? The purpose of business, right? So I've merged. I'm looking at a restructuring. Now, the restructuring may be for various things. You know, you're selling off some business operations and you're bringing the team together, or you've decided to start up a new business unit. All of this comes into play. Whatever it is, it starts with, why are you in business? So the first answer would be to make 500 million or, you know, 50 billion or 500 billion. Great. Let's say 5 years from now, you hit that financial point, right? What are you going to be in business for then? What I'm getting at is, you have to answer that altruistic higher purpose that the business is in for, which benefits society or community. From there, you back work. So if this is my purpose, what is the experience I want to deliver, right? When you articulate these down with your team and you have it up on a whiteboard, it makes you start thinking tactically to say, so if this is the experience, what does my brand stand for? What will the marketing say? How should sales be approached? What channels do I use? What should be the raw materials that I can use? How cost effectively can I get this raw material? Because I don't want this to be more than $50 to the customer. All of that starts flowing. You see, you're working backwards. You're planning, right? And that's literally where, when you walk that process back, you arrive at an area which is called, so what are my skills gap? What technical skills and soft skills gaps do I have? what kind of personality people do I need in my finance, in my accounts, in my marketing, in my call customer service, in my sales, in my production, or, you know, my web administrator should be, my social media community manager or team, what should be there? All of this comes in to identify there's a fit. This role delivers X. So this role has ABC. You are identifying behavioral traits. And then come back to the senior management. They need to look at what do I need to change in my approach? Because I'm setting up, I'm making a change. Change involves me doing something differently. Theoretically, we in behavior change, we have this. If you do an activity for 21 or 23 days, it becomes a habit, right? Frankly speaking, if that was the case, personal opinion, I must clarify, a lot of New Year resolutions wouldn't break. People would be very successful because 23 days takes us into end of January. But actually, we find people losing heart and commitment and persistence down the line. So that senior, that leading team must decide not on very many things. I would ideally, from experience, 3 or 4 very key change initiatives, culture change initiatives, that they themselves can drive. And each individual takes one. Anything more than one is very hard to make change. So, for example, let's say you have team meetings or organization-wide meetings used to be every month. And you decided that, hey, you know what? We're going to do this every Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon or whenever, but once a week. And we are not going to have this one-way monologue of 16 PowerPoint slides of what's happened in the previous month, but we're just going to sit down and we're going to have an AMA, ask me anything with that senior manager, right? Or you may decide, you know what? I'm going to have this group meetings for 1 hour throughout the week. And in place of bringing everybody together, I'm going to have groups. But once in a quarter, I'm going to bring the entire organization together. So imagine a company like Intel or Amazon, you know, gazillion employees all over the world. So how do you foster change? That's where you do a timeline of place by place by place, and you'd run into, you know, 3 to 4 years. So to come back and recap, yes, it's possible. It can be done. What it needs is commitment, intent, and will. Intent, will are two different things. Commitment means you're committing and you stick by that commitment, whether it results in success or failure, however it's desired. Intent is that I am going to see this through, which means I'm going to get whatever resources are required. Okay. And the will is bringing in people on board. That's the main leadership capability. When you have that, you grow your team. John, you play football, so I'm going to take this analogy, right? If you just had a goalkeeper and a coach, right?
Yes.
Both teams have a coach. The coach is in the sideline bunker and they have a goalkeeper each. So the goalkeepers go to the goal, the ball is in the kickoff, and the coach is in the bunker. What happens? Inertia, right? So the beautiful game has 11 players for a particular reason, right? And the 11 players each have a role in the position that they play. So you don't have a back defender suddenly going up all the way to the forward line until and unless it's a planned strategic maneuver to do something or the other. They do go up. But what I'm trying to say is everyone has a role. And this is how culture change happens. You bring a team of people together with a common objective, which everybody is aligned to because there's something in each person individually that appeals. And what that something is that whole bit about appreciation and recognition. Money stops buying value at a certain point in time. When you're a junior executive, the next $500 makes a huge amount of motivation. When you're a CEO, I'm sorry, but the next 30% isn't going to drive me because I know the headaches that I have to take, right? What's going to drive me is one word, legacy. Will I go down as Henry Ford? Would I go down as Richard Branson? That kind of legacy building. So culture, to sum up, you can change, you can develop. That's what I meant by thinking by design Otherwise, it happens by default. Default has good and bad, because if you're individually, I believe everybody is good. It's just that some people behave in a particular manner. But mm-hmm. when it's default and you're behaving in a manner that is not conducive to your business, speaking of which, I think a couple of days back, or was it yesterday, I did a post on LinkedIn talking exactly about that. A lot of business leaders, people do not understand that their behavior is actually harming the brand.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't realize it. They believe that that's the leadership behavior. And mm-hmm. that's where default culture becomes an absolute albatross. It's a millstone around your neck. It'll mm-hmm. drag you down, no matter how much of fancy technology you have. On the other hand, if you spend the time to design and mm-hmm. you work on that design, at every stage of that design development of culture, you are actually gaining, because every moment of experience is learning for your team and yourself. And you have this 360-degree perspective that comes in. And what happens is it creates an organization that doesn't have silo functions. So, you know, you have a marketing team that does marketing, and you have a production team that does production, or, you know, a digital team that does e-commerce. Everybody in the organization, from the cleaning boy all the way to the CEO, is a marketer. Everybody will talk. The best example I have is a statement which we can find online very easily. And when John F. Kennedy went to NASA before, you know, the Apollo 19 went to moon, and he met a gentleman in the corridor who's a janitor and asked, "What do you do?" He said, "Sir, Mr. President, my role is to actually help make sure the person going to be on the moon does not slip and fall. So I'm changing it slightly." The pride in the work, individual work, is connected to the big purpose of that organization, which was everything about NASA was getting man on moon first, right?
Yeah.
That's it. That's exactly the value of culture. So if I were to sum it up, each organization has a kind of leadership that it needs. Leadership that works in organization A is not, and I repeat, N-O-T, emphatically, not going to work in organization B, even if it's in the same industry. Let me take a sporting analogy. You can take a coach from a Premier League club, English Premier League club, out from the top flight of football and put him in another club in the same top flight, and mm-hmm. the coach fails miserably.
Fails. Definitely.
It's not that the tactics and the strategies are different. It's because the cohesion and the ability to galvanize the players to buy into the coach's vision doesn't happen. So the leadership requirement is very different. It's very critical to understand that leadership requirement, right? You need organizational development people, behavioral scientist people to actually come up and help you to understand that, gauge it, study it, understand where is this business going, what value is it delivering, and work backwards to say, what do I want my customer and my employees to feel? These are the two legs, customer and employees, to actually feel and say. Because what you're trying to do at the end of the day is create this customer and employee pool of advocates that mm-hmm. say, one life is boom, that's it. It's the king of podcasts, if I were to put it as an analogy, all right? So when you identify what you want that feeling to be, that's the experience, you then put, how do you create that feeling? You have tactics.
Yes.
What do you need for that tactics? Is resource, cost, people, technology. Then go ahead and execute, monitor, right? Talk every day, talk, not in the business, on the business. Talk with your customers, talk with your employees. Give them empathy, appreciation, recognition, ear, as I call it, right? And when you are communicating that experience, part of your culture, be entertaining, be educating, right? You'll have the last E, you'll engage. For any business, whether it's B2B, B2C, it's digital, it's brick and mortar, the holy grail is engagement. When you have engagement, you convert. I've wow. spoken a lot, but the questions you asked me, John, they're all interconnected. If we individually lead ourselves from a one life perspective of being authentic, being true, the behavior that we project and do as a leader manifests in a culture that our team takes up. We will have lots of people leaving us in that journey and lots of people joining us in that journey, but the learnings will bloom sustainability. It will bloom value out to employees, to people. So yeah, businesses have told me, I'm investing so much, so many thousands in training this employee, and the employee is going to leave me 3 or 4 years later. I said, right, think 10 years down the line when this employee is possibly in a competitive organization and is a vice president or a senior vice president. Can you imagine the respect and value he's going to have for you because of the, this is where he learned his ropes.
Definitely.
So is he going to be competing, or is he going to have that little bit of saying, hey, can we do something called cooptation, which is a totally different, which is collaborate and work together for the benefit of the common customer, right? And businesses today get psyched because this is a thinking which is, you know, it's a collaborative thinking. But I was summing up. So individual leadership creates the culture. The culture creates the experience. The experience gets you engagement. No rocket science, just a little bit of hard work.
Oh, that's much beautifully put, Joy, and I really appreciate it. You know, it's even opened up much more that I didn't know. You've talked a lot, but not a lot, when it's much important and, you know, coming into our ears with a lot of wisdom. You know, too much is when somebody's speaking nonsense. That's when we say he's speaking a lot. But when somebody's, you know, giving you something that is educative and changing something in your life, you never even see the time. You don't even watch your timing. We can keep on listening and listening the whole day, Joy, and we will not get tired of you. So to sum up this conversation today, Joy, I would take you back to the work-life balance. And there's this question of one life.
Yep.
I am a human being. I have a life, and that life is only one, and I live it once, and until when I'll have the eternity, the second life. But this life that we live today, Joy, what brings happiness into this life? That's my last question that will sum up this conversation.
Short answer, you bring happiness in your own life. That's the short answer. The choice is in your hands. Life cannot be looked at in compartments or boxes. Life is actually seamless. We've created these boxes, these compartments, in our own constructs, because that's how we've all been sort of conditioned, right? But at the end of the day, everything that we do in our 24 hours is actually a seamless series of experiences and moments in time. It's all one life, right? I'll end by saying, be true to yourself. Find who you are. Connect and align with your soul and your heart. Because when your soul and your heart, as my dear friend Rahila Khan, as a shout out, and who's been on your podcast, says, that's your inner GPS. When your soul and your heart are connected, you're automatically behaving truthfully, honestly, authentically, genuine. You're being yourself. And when you're being yourself, you create an experience as a personal brand or as a business culture that is sending a message, I'm interested in you and your development, because in your growth lies my value and my benefit. What are you doing? You're creating a legacy. And the last line that I have, as I said, please always call me Joy. Why? Because my personal mission is to humanize business by giving them joy.
Wow.
The end. The end.
That's a very beautiful one. I'm also learning to stick to joy. You know, sometimes I drift a little bit, but I stick to joy to see how joyous it is to be next to you, my brother. And just to end it, Joy, a lot of people sometimes might want to reach you. And the best way of knowing this is by you telling us how they can reach you, and specifically for what kind of advice or pieces of advice. What do you do? What do you do to them? And how can they get that, Joy?
The best way to reach me is LinkedIn. I'm always available. So send me a DM, reach out to me with a message on LinkedIn. The second way to reach me is very simply go to 3minutemarketing.biz and use the contact us facility over there. Now, reach out to me for, I don't do mentoring or coaching. I'm a pure business focused manager, if I may call it that. So my area that I'm able to help is entrepreneurs, businesses of different shapes, sizes, multinationals, whatever. If you need help in creating strategy and innovation, that's where Create the Edge, one of my startups, is. Shout out to my fellow brother, Saheb Yusuf, he and I work together on Create the Edge, as you know. So we handle the strategy and innovation from a people perspective, looking at business strategy, sales, marketing, business development, and how can a business actually move its experience and create an edge. The second startup I have with a dear associate and brother also down under is Nick Bendel. A shout out to him, is 3 Minute Marketing. And people can look it up on LinkedIn under the hashtags. It's purely for marketing strategy and marketing brand experience work. Nick and I are available to consult and run marketing advisory services. Nick's based in Sydney, I'm based in Kuala Lumpur, but we work closely. It's a startup that has just started a month ago, and that's the area that we work at. Saheb, Nick, and myself, we are available on various contractual things. Yusuf and I are available on site if we are required. So we have done projects where we've gone on for a client and worked 6 weeks on site and come back. Or, you know, I'm personally available. It's on my profile for even longer annual term contracts. So people can reach out, say no to anybody. I'm always happy to spend a few minutes having a chat. If it's anything to do with business, strategy, marketing, these are my areas that I could help with.
That's well said, Joy, and thank you so much for accepting to be with us. It was joyful time together, and we've learned a lot, and these are pieces of advice that we get from brothers like you. And let me say that this is just the beginning of our conversation, and we will have a lot of these in the coming days, Joy, if you allow me to invite you again to one
time. Oh, it'll be a pleasure, John. Thank you so much for having me. I've been wanting to be on One Life because it's One Life. And thank you for the brilliant questions. It's a privilege to be on the show to help share some of the experience I'm learning too. And I'd be delighted to be back and, you know, talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joy. And you have a unique ability to do things that we have seen ourselves as a nation and a country. And you have a tremendous gift to have.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for choosing One Talk Podcast and listening to today's message. I hope you subscribe not to miss any episode that comes each and every week. We'll drop it right here to inspire not only you, but the world over. One Talk, the world unites.